Oh, okay. Perfect.
No, it's just a podcast.
Okay, so I don't have to worry how I look or anything.
No,
Oh,
no.
I even took a shower.
You know, I can't smell through video though.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Well, everything is just overwhelming right now in a positive way though. A lot going on. As mentioned before, we had our organizing convention.
How was that?
Well, that was just awesome. I mean, it was the first time that there were community events before and stuff like that, but nothing as professional and nothing as diverse. So usually they have from the certifiers, you know, they have some gatherings, but we never had an event where we had like professional speakers, where we had that kind of diversity when it comes to maturity of the businesses, when it comes to focus levels, when it comes to everything. And the day after everybody arrived back home, I saw on Instagram, oh, these people were talking to each other and these people are talking to each other. It's just overwhelming. I mean, it's nice to see how bringing people together makes them more successful every day. And
Yeah.
that's just
Oh, that's
awesome.
great.
Ordnung trifft, dein Podcast für den Blick in die Welt der Ordnung.
So maybe give me 1 minute to explain quickly in German to the audience who you are and what we are talking about today.
I don't know, what are we talking about today?
Everything. I will guide you through. I will guide you through. Okay, so herzlich willkommen zu Folge 31. Muss ich jetzt mal gucken. 33, nein. What is it? 32, 32 von Ordnung trifft. Jetzt komme ich schon durcheinander, so viele Leute, die hier bei mir sind. Heute zu Gast der Barry aus Texas, aus den USA. Und er spricht mit mir heute über die IFPOA, die International Federation of Professional Organizing Associations. Und er ist der Gründer dieser Plattform. Und ich bin sehr, sehr gespannt, was er uns erzählt. Er war der Präsident der NAPO. Und spricht mit mir heute über seine Karriere, über alles, was er aus den USA so mitgenommen hat und auf internationales Level gebracht. So, just quickly explained who you are. You are the father of the IFPOA.
Yeah. Well, I was president of NAPO for 2 terms back 2003 to 2007. So I was very active in my professional association. And I wrote a book, Organize Your Garage in No Time. I did residential organizing, office organizing. And then my business changed and I got more into managing moves for people and especially for seniors. And basically, that's what I did for the last, oh, suppose the last 10 years before I sold my business. And now I have an online moving concierge company where I guide people through their moves and lead them to appropriate vendors for packing and unpacking and moving and decorating and car shipping and wine and pet shipping. So
Wow.
that's what I'm doing now in retirement.
Okay. So, but when did you start your career in the
In
organizing industry?
organizing 1996, but that was my third career. I had two other careers before that.
Okay. But you started self-employed
Yes.
and then you build the company that you sold afterwards?
Absolutely. Yes. Everything since 1985, I didn't receive a paycheck from anybody.
Okay, wow.
But I had another business before it. It was house sitting, pet sitting in Florida. And again, that was 11 years also that I was self-employed. So I've been self-employed since I was 31 years old.
Wow. And you know what's interesting? I talked to you know, now because of you and also your colleagues, to international people. And they are telling me that most of them, they start as a solopreneur, as a one man or woman show, and then they move into companies having employees.
Right.
In Germany, we are not at that stage yet. So when did you decide to hire, and how did it, you know, I think that that's also a little bit different to just being responsible for yourself, right?
Back in the mid 90s, that's how everybody did it. You did it by yourself. Mm. You organized for people. I mean, very, very, very few people had employees back then.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while I resisted because I didn't want to have the aggravation and headache of managing other people. But then I realized, one, in order to make more money and to retire sooner, that you need to have people. And then when I started doing moves and moving projects, I realized the only way you can do a moving project is to have a team where you can unpack the people in 1 or 2 days instead of it dragging on for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, in order for companies to grow, you also need a certain amount of projects coming in. And at what level, maturity level of the US market, did you say, okay, now it makes sense? Or when did it make sense?
Well, it makes sense when you have more phone calls and people that want you than you can do. So it becomes obvious from your marketing if you don't have enough time in a week to service all of those people, then you need other organizers to work for you. That's one.
And in what time span was that in the US?
I probably worked by myself for about 3 or 4 years before I began to hire others. And you have to remember, when you have people working for you, you're not guaranteeing any certain number of hours. So it's not like you have to pay them for 20 or 30 hours if they only work 10. So you find people that you know don't want to work 40 hours, and then it works.
Okay, maybe that is because when you hire a person here, then everybody has in their mind, okay, that's a 40-hour job.
Yeah, no.
Okay, maybe start with a part-time person.
I'm organizing companies, and I got to a point where I had enough work for 1 or 2 people to work full-time. We mm-hmm. call 40 hours full-time, but it's good to have a variety of people that don't necessarily want to work full-time. You need a balance.
Mm-hmm. When do you think, in what year you feel the American market was at a point where it was very normal for people somehow to call a professional organizer to help them maybe move or, you know, reduce? Or
some people would say that hasn't happened yet, but still, I don't believe that. You know, I would say 2000, 2005,
okay,
around that time period. And then with the more television shows about hoarding and Peter Walsh and Julie Morgenstern, and people became more famous in the industry and writing books. But I would say for sure, in the early 2000s, it became enough of a profession here that people knew what you were talking about.
Okay. And you were focusing back then only on organizing?
Correct.
And you were also a member of NAPO?
Yeah, I was a member of NAPO from the very first day that I began organizing. And then, like I said, 7 years after I joined, I became the president for four years.
And how come, what was the advantage for you being in NAPO? Why did you say, I need to do this?
Well, there was no other support group, number one. And I suppose part of it is validation. Part of it is it helps you in the marketing to show that you're a member of a group that is all about organizing. And I mean, that's basically it. I mean, for me, if you're going to be serious about any job, you need to belong to the professional association associated with that job and to get education specific to that industry.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense. And seven years later, you mentioned you became president. And then during that time, what is actually part of that job? What was your job being a president?
Well, it was very time consuming. Mm-hmm. But it also allowed me to help steer and grow the industry, mm-hmm. as well as the association. And probably some of my greatest accomplishments, not my accomplishment, but the mm-hmm. association's accomplishments during my time was, we started work on the certification program, CPO. Mm-hmm. We launched NAPO education program leading up to Certified Professional Organizer. And NAPO took more of a role in the international community and yeah. realized that the association was much more than the United States. And so I kind of carried that torch too, to help everyone realize that we need to do this. I mean, it's that the industry is going to grow around the world, and that NAPO should be a leader and should be in the front. And that's when we created the International Federation of Professional Organizing Associations. Mm-hmm. And then also one of the things that I am happy about during my presidency is that we focus more on marketing mm-hmm. to make the market aware mm-hmm. that we exist. And I was interviewed for many newspapers and magazines and so forth. And it was a great time because it was when the internet was taking hold and everybody knew Google. Before that, you used to hear people say, oh, I didn't know there was an association. I didn't know there was such a job. Yeah. Well, now, I mean, you have to be living under a rock to not know that something like this exists.
Yeah. But you can also be a member of NAPO without being an American organizer, right?
Yes.
So NAPO, you can be an international member.
Yes. NAPO has international members as well. Yes.
Okay. And how come that you started this whole thing with the international community?
Because I love to travel, number one.
Okay.
And I was always, when I would travel, seek out other organizers. And when I realized that we were growing beyond the United States and Canada, that Holland, the Netherlands had an association, and the United Kingdom had an association, and I was like, all right, we need something.
Yeah.
We need something to bring these associations together so they can talk, that they can learn from each other, you know, not have to make the same mistakes and so forth. So I wasn't sure what it was going to do, but I knew that we needed to have it.
And now you have, I think, 12 members, right?
Yeah, I think we're 13 now. We just
with France.
Yeah, we just admitted the Franks.
Yeah. Franks. Oh, we are going to apply.
because it's, they are united not only by organizing, but they're united by the French language.
Yeah.
Which was kind of unique because, like, when Netherlands became a member, you know, it was the organizing that brought them in. But this one, it's, they market to all speakers of French throughout the world, which I think is very nice.
Oh, throughout the world. I thought they were reaching out to maybe Switzerland, that part, but I was not aware that they're actually everybody who speaks the language. Okay.
Anybody that speaks fluent French. So if you live in Quebec or you live in Belgium, any French speaker.
Okay.
You know, if you speak French Guiana, you know, you could join.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, obviously, if you don't know French, you're not going to want to join.
Yeah, of course, makes sense. I mean, we the same with Org Art. It's the same structure where we say the German speaking,
right?
You know, market. But then, where else do you have German speaking people beside right. Austria, Switzerland, and maybe a little bit. Some of the Dutch people speak a little bit of German, and of course, Germany.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. So that international association, how often do they meet, and who is member actually?
We meet twice a year by Zoom, and then when we started the IPOA, I mean, basically, it was strictly for communication. And then Brazil brought to the table an idea about let's make a world organizing day. Mm. So we did. We made a world organizing day. And that was not NAPO's idea. That was Brazil's idea.
So that means that's a day for...
It's a national holiday.
Oh, wow. When is that?
Well, not national. It's an international holiday.
Yeah.
And I believe it is May 20th, every year, May 20th.
Good to know. I will write that down now.
Yeah, World Organizing Day. And okay. it's really a holiday to help professional organizers market their services and market themselves by rallying around and celebrating an international holiday. As far as the countries... I have to take out my paper here. We have Brazil, Spain, United Kingdom, Italy, China, ICD, the Institute for on Chronic Disorganizations, U.S., Japan, Korea, the Netherlands, Canada. Now we have Finland.
Yeah, I heard.
And we have the Francophones. So it's growing quickly. And I mean, I didn't know how fast it was going to grow. I just knew we needed to do it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I'm glad we did.
Can you see the different maturity levels during within those markets? Can you say, okay, the Americans, maybe the Canadians are, you know, the most mature, more people know about it?
And then the United States and Canada are probably the most mature markets, but the market is pretty mature in the Netherlands. They started around the time that I joined NAPO, and Brazil is a very mature market. The Brazilian Association has more people that attend a conference than NAPO does. And so I would say United States, Canada, Brazil, Netherlands are probably the most mature markets, but it's coming fast.
And how are they different? Or what is unique about them? Or what is the same?
Okay, one difference is, for example, and that's why I don't think anybody's going to be very successful if somebody tried to do it, but it didn't happen. Was an international association of organizers. And part of the reason I don't think will happen, or who knows? I mean, it could happen, but language is different.
Yeah.
Number one. Number two, for example, in Brazil and in Argentina, when they're teaching, you know, we pride ourselves on the fact that we don't just go in and organize and make everything look pretty. But part of our goal is to instill, to teach organizing skills. So after we're gone and we no longer work with that client, that they can stay organized because of the things that we taught them.
Yeah.
Well, in Brazil and Argentina, they're usually not working with the end user, the family. They're working with the cleaning personnel, the maid, because in Brazil and Argentina, a lot of people can afford to have a maid full time or most of the time. And so they're oftentimes, because they're the ones that run the house and keep the house in good order and organization beyond cleaning. And so many times there, they're not working with the end user, which is the family that's going to benefit from all this, but they're working with the person that's going to make it happen, but not necessarily the person living in the house.
So that's the culture actually and the living circumstances of clients impact the work of the organizers.
Exactly.
Makes sense.
So that's why because, and there are, I'm sure there are many other cultural differences. Well, for example, like I believe you and I discussed at one time, the German people don't move as much and, yeah, you know, don't change houses as much. So if somebody was going to try to do move management in Germany, it's going to look differently than somebody building a business with a lot of move management in the United States.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, for the last, you know, 20, 30 years, there have been people that specialize in move management. I guess the people in the United States are a little more mobile, yeah, than in European cultures.
Yeah, yeah. Also, the consuming behavior is a little bit different. Exactly. I talked to my friend, she's German-Chinese. Well, she's Chinese, but she's, you know, living in Germany for a long time. And she talked to me about China and their consuming behaviors, where they had, you know, where they were living under Mao and, you know, that generation, and they lived together in a house. And, you know, all of that is a big impact to the daily job of an organizer. Whereas in Germany, you had the Second World War, but you don't necessarily have that in other countries. Well, as a big impact, right? So,
and now Japanese are, I mean, they're limited by space, but they're more of a consumerist. And I'm sure the Chinese would be too if there was the ability, you know, of the products and so forth.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about China was, it's like, was a wow effect for me. You know, living in a society like that, you cannot just escape from, you know, from the stuff you have. You escape, and we are always saying in the industry, then you're free. You have more space. You have more time. And then one of my colleagues said, and what are they getting freedom of? And why do they need that freedom? They're still in that system. And that was like, that was really something I didn't even think of. Whereas in countries like Germany or maybe in the US, you're way more free to do certain things.
Right. Well, when I think of freedom that good organization brings, it's the freedom of not being buried and drowning in stuff. And it's freedom to live the life you want, because your stuff, sometimes our stuff can hold us back from living the kind of life that we want. So when I think of freedom, it's not political freedom.
No, no.
Yeah.
It's not, for sure. But the challenge with them is they are sitting in a box like that. They only have space to move like here and here, even right, with what I do for a living and who I can marry and what I need to do in society.
Right,
everything right has these limitations.
More regimentation.
So, yeah. So that was something that I learned, that how culture is still different in different countries. And that's why the job of a professional organizer is very, very different in every country.
Right.
So I can totally understand where you say making one association does make sense.
Well, I mean, like I say, they tried and I could see it. I mean, maybe one day, well, NAPO tries to do it, but it's still, we're basically an organization of the United States. But maybe one day, you know, you in Germany or the Netherlands or Brazil will try to make an international conference. But of course, for that to succeed, it almost for sure would need to be in English. And that's an issue, because not everybody speaks fluent English.
That's true. Even though we want everybody to, it's the language, right? But still, you have, also that's something about I mean, it's an international decision, right? That the English is the language. But you also have, and that's what I like about this profession, you have different levels, age levels as well. So it's not just, you know, you come from university and you do that. You actually want people also maybe a little bit older, because they speak to people in their own age. They know what life is about, right? So, and that's why maybe English might be a little
bit challenging. I would say that the average age of a professional organizer in the United States, as those who got into it 20 years ago, I would say, though, the average age is kind of going down a little, which is good. And I think one thing that shows that the profession has matured is that it's not, it used to be, it was a second or a third or a fourth profession mm-hmm. for the people that got in it. Now, younger people are seeing that it's a valid career path mm-hmm. and it could be their first profession or their second profession. So I think that shows right there that the profession is maturing and growing and becoming mainstream, that younger people would think, yeah, I can do this. Whereas back in the 80s, most young people would not say, I'm going to be a professional organizer. Mm-hmm. I remember one time in a NAPO conference, a mother brought her daughter to the conference. And I'm like, that was very meaningful to show that, wow, you know, this child sees what her mother's doing is really an interesting career path and would consider it for herself,
yeah.
which didn't used to happen.
But you know what? As in Germany, everybody right now, everybody is an entrepreneur, like self-employed right now. There's no company right now. Okay, I mean, there's groups where they give contracts to each other, for sure,
right.
but they are not hired, so they're not employed. And then I met Mindy, and Mindy told me that she actually started her career as an employee. So she has never been self-employed in her complete career of professional organizers.
I didn't know that about Mindy.
See? That's what I learned from her. How awesome is that? That is, and we talked about the different like generations and levels that we are going through, and we are somehow on level two, and I will talk to her about those levels. But you guys are at the stage where everything becomes really professional. Also, you know, you get that code, that job code. You're going to apply in 26 again, I realized, or she told me.
Yeah.
And that it's going to be an official trained job, like a university or like then something official where you can go to, and then you have an official certification, and then you can go and apply to companies or, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
Does that, but what does that need? What do you guys need still to actually get there?
Oh, it's just government bureaucracy.
Okay.
I mean, and it's as much for taxes too. They want to classify you when you're filing your taxes. Mm-hmm. I mean, a person can say they're an interior designer and they can put a code down right now.
Exactly. I know.
But that doesn't mean they had training. So, honestly, I'm not sure why the code is so important, except it just makes us official and makes us a recognized profession. Right now, it's just you put on your taxes professional services.
Yeah. But you know what? The productivity coaches, they also have that code.
I wasn't aware that they did.
Mindy told me they have that code, apparently. And you don't have it. So it's just, you know, you have
it. Well, it wouldn't stop. I mean, I could use that code if I wanted to.
Of course, of course. It's just something for yourself, you know? Why is that? That's I'm very curious about that.
It's just bureaucracy.
Okay. So coming back to the International Association, foundation, actually, you said you met twice, you meet twice via Zoom. And
twice
what are you guys?
Yep.
And what are you guys talking about? What are you exchanging?
We share best practices, like, for example, during COVID, what are you doing to keep your membership active and involved? Or we'll discuss, how do you get more people to spend the money to join and come to your conference? You know, how do you make the organization, the association, more relevant, more valuable, that, you know, people would for sure want to join. And part of the problem I think any association has today is that people can get their needs met on social media and the internet easier than before. If you want an education, NAPO was definitely the place to go. It still is. But many other people have training courses now. So you don't have to come to NAPO to get what you need. You can go other places and meet your, well, that's what they think.
Yeah.
Is they go other places and get their needs met. Whereas you and I both know a professional association is the best place to get your needs met for collaboration and validation and so forth.
I mean, they can go for sure out there, and there's a lot of people who do, but I asked myself and the team, we're asking ourselves, what is the added value we can bring nobody else can bring? And because we are a niche, right? We are such a focused on such a niche topic, right. We can develop something that nobody else can meet.
Exactly.
Right?
You are exactly right.
But you need that business sense and then a very close connection to your customers. And in this case, that's the professional organizers. So the only thing you can do is go out there and ask on all those different levels, what exactly are your needs right now, not just as a business person, but as a professional organizer in that industry and that maturity in the market where you are right now.
Absolutely.
And you can develop stuff like that.
There's a book out there, I haven't read it, but it's called Race to Relevance. And it's a book explaining to associations, if you keep doing everything the same and don't get current and up to date and meet the needs of the members, like you mentioned, you're going to lose membership and you're going to wither away and die. So it's keeping exactly what you said, meeting their needs today, and keeping your association current.
Yes.
And that would be for any association, not just organizing.
But then I have to ask a question. But so why? I'm still struggling with nonprofit organization. Because when I look at those organizations, then they feel, because they are nonprofit, that's reason enough to join sometimes. Not just, not NAPO or, but in general, I feel.
The nonprofit thing, I think, is more, like we have talked about in the United States, it's a more common concept. But for example, let's say there was a Catholic church that was for profit and a Catholic church that's not for profit.
Yeah.
Which is the one a person's going to be most willing to give their money? Probably to the nonprofit, because they feel like, well, I don't want to pay this kind of money to my church just so they can make money and have a bigger paycheck. I think the principle behind a nonprofit is that any money that is made, I think this is the difference. Any money that is made that is beyond the operational costs gets pumped back in to the association for the benefit of the members. Whereas when there's an organization where the profits go into the pockets of individual people, well, why would a member want to support that?
I can answer that.
Okay.
If you gain the trust of the people that you are building, you are creating a win-win-win, a win for the partners that you bring into the boat, a win for your organization, and a win for each and every member. If you have that trust, they trust that you are doing profits that come to the good of everyone, also yourself.
They trust the you.
Yes.
And you are here today. But is Verena going to be here tomorrow?
I hope. But
I know. But the association will be here tomorrow.
Yeah.
In 50 years or whatever, we hope. And that if it's run by one person or two people or five people, or it's like a company. Do I think that the cable company or Facebook or Twitter, I mean, whatever. Do I think these companies are in existence for me? No.
No, wait. But you have to check the visions and everything. And it's the same with nonprofits, though. If you don't match the requirements of the members, which is we need to trust you guys to make us successful, right? If we don't meet that anymore, we are going to lose them. It's nonprofit or not. Yeah. Either way, we will lose them. Right. And even though if I'm not there and my target for sure, me and my, also my colleagues, we will build something that goes beyond us for sure. And the part is we can only be successful when each and every member is successful.
Of course. But, right? You know, you're thinking from a benevolent standpoint, and many people who run companies think of a, don't come from there, and they think from a me, 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 and how can I make more money? How can I make more money? And it's not about you. It's about them.
Yeah, it's true.
And I think that's sort of a different between a for-profit and a not-for-profit, or at least it's a perceived difference.
Yeah, yeah. Then I have a question still. I mean, I've seen them all. I'm coming from the automotive industry, which is all for-profit, only for-profit. I mean, don't you think that this industry has a different motivation in developing itself? You know, when I did a lot of interviews, like hundred interviews, I would say. And each and every person told me what their intrinsic motivation was. And nobody told me they're doing it for money. Not even one.
I did. Okay. I'm not working now. No, of course. See, that's the other thing. As a volunteer, your motives cannot be questioned because you're not getting paid.
Yeah. I mean, so they want to be paid for sure.
Anytime that I, you know, spent as president or on the board of directors of NAPO, or the time that I volunteer for the IFPOA, no one can question my motives because I'm not getting paid. But if I was getting paid, your motives could be questioned. I'm just saying, I'm not saying everybody would, and I'm not saying that this industry isn't somewhat unique. It's like the American Cancer Society. Hmm. We know their motive is to cure cancer and hopefully make people's lives with cancer better. But if all of their executives were overpaid, paid too much, like let's say a scandal happened and information was released that the director of the American Cancer Society makes $2.5 million a year, people are going to lose faith in that organization and the good that we know that organization does.
Well, I have a question. But if that organization is doing such a good job that millions and millions of
people shouldn't care.
Right? Right. But they get care and they have everything and that person gets paid very well.
Well, that to me, I think that's okay, because I am definitely a capitalist. And an entrepreneur.
Up until a certain point, I am as well. Up until a certain point. But for me, it's important that every single, let's call it, stakeholder in this organization needs to have their stake. That's my belief. Only then it works. Otherwise, you're dropping.
Right. No, I agree. Right? I agree. Yeah.
So I will prove you. I will prove you will make a difference.
I found it very interesting. And again, cultural.
Yeah, maybe it's cultural.
The nonprofit sector is not a big thing in Germany. I mean, I would think churches must be not for profit.
You know what? That we are paying. We are the only country in the world where we are paying. We have to. When you are a member of the Catholic Church, you are paying a certain amount of your salary every month to the church. You have to. Did you know?
There's no way around it.
Nope. Either you just leave the church, but then you're not a member of the church anymore.
So I'm sure it's the same word. We call it tithing, and it's you give as you can afford, but do they actually check and see how much you make?
Yes. It's an automatic thing. They are taking it from your paycheck. You cannot do anything about it.
If you're a member of the Catholic Church.
Yes.
But see, to me, that's ridiculous.
Thank you. It is. So in Germany, everything works apparently a little bit different than it does in the US. But, right. You know, we'll see where it heads us. The good thing about it, the way we are setting it up, is because I'm observing the international market right now, is that at the same time where we have the Org Art organization developing the organizers, we also have a platform where we market them and they can see directly the impact. We are very transparent on, you know, click rates and followers and everything, very, very transparent. So they know exactly what they are heading into when they are joining.
Well, in NAPA, hopefully we're marketing them too, although people say that they don't get that much business from the search function on the website, but that is NAPA's goal, is don't build your business on NAPA marketing for you, but certainly we hope it helps.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we are going to meet anyways next year. So
are you coming to Las Vegas?
I do.
Oh, good, good, good.
Yeah, I do. Together with my founding members, we are all going.
Well, I plan to be there as well.
Yeah. And I'm very, very interested in, you know, deep diving into everything that NAPO does and to better understand what maybe we can also do together. I believe that there's a lot of, yeah, on international level, a lot of things. So, for example, the pro bono project that we do by the end of this year, where we had, I think, more than 60 organizers joined now, and they are all donating their time, and hopefully, well, they're reaching out to the local newspapers and they can send us their links. We put them on our website. So, and then you have backlinks to your website. So it's all about the digital net of information that we are trying to build. And my idea would be maybe to, because I know you guys do that too, maybe to join on an international level so we can, you know.
Well, World Organizing Day will definitely help.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So definitely look that up online and, you know, I'll keep you posted. But, and then every association can promote World Organizing Day.
Yeah.
However they want. But it also gives the members an opportunity to use that holiday as a way to market themselves.
Yeah. So are you still running the IFPOA, or who's running it right now?
I don't run it. I'm a de facto executive director. I mean, because the presidents of the associations keep changing,
yeah,
I'm a constant because I'm the NAPO international liaison, because I got the thing going. But at any point, someone might try to, you know, take it over. But it's probably not going to happen because everybody's volunteer time is so limited. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm semi-retired and just have my online business, I have more time to do it. I don't mind that I'm functioning that way. I just get into trouble sometimes with technology. But I don't see anybody trying to become a paid executive director or anything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as long as I can, as long as I don't have Alzheimer's and still have a mind and a memory, it's a good way for me to stay involved because travel is my passion and the...
Oh, are you visiting like the different countries?
I do. Like I'm going to Argentina December 13th.
Cool.
And I'll be there for 5 weeks. That's not my purpose to go. I mean, it's my own money. It's my own travel. But I know a bunch of organizers down there now. Not a bunch, like a dozen organizers. It's growing very slow down there. One, because it's more of a poorer economy. So the people don't have as much money to do it. And I have, organizer friends in Brazil. So for me, it's like I go where I go. Then I look for the organizers while I'm there.
And when are you coming to Germany then?
I'll come to Germany when you hire me to be a keynote speaker.
At the next Orvention.
And you pay for me to come. That's when I'll come.
Okay. Sounds
it's
good.
It's so funny that you use the word Orvention because that's what the Netherlands people call their conference when they used to have it. Is it a German Dutch word or what?
No. Ordnung and convention. We just put it together and then we said convention. But you know what? I'm going to do my podcast next week. So I will talk to Yvette and Marianne next week.
Oh, you will?
Yeah, I will talk to them.
Good. So you set that up?
Yeah. And I will ask her about the convention. Maybe we do it together next time. But then we would also need to do it in English, though.
Well, that's the problem.
Like, again.
But when I spoke in Brazil, God, it's probably been 10 years now ago, I spoke in English. and everybody in the audience had headphones on, and they were being, there was an interpreter that interpreted everything I said into Portuguese.
Okay, okay.
I was the only one speaking English.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense then. So as we can see, there's still some roadblocks a little bit, but we can overcome them. And I'm very happy to reach out to you guys and to listen whatever you have to say and whatever we can learn from you as such an, you know, young market.
There was a NAPO president, several presidents before me. Her name was Barbara Hemphill. And her motto was, together we are better.
And yes, better that was, together. That's what I'm saying. That's my motto. That's my hashtag that I'm using all the time right now.
Together we are better. Yeah. And there's nothing more true than that.
Exactly. And even on international level, despite the fact we're having different languages or, you know, maturity levels.
We can all learn from each other for sure. And we can grow together bigger and better than ever.
Yeah. So is there anything else that you would like to share with the German, Swiss, Austrian, just Luxembourg?
You know, your industry may be younger. It may, you may feel like, oh, I'm never going to make a good living with this, but stick with it is the best advice I can give anybody, and you will. Mm-hmm. And
perfect. Thank you very much, Barry. That was a delight to talk to you.
My pleasure.
Das war's auch schon für heute. Danke, dass du dabei warst. Wir freuen uns auf die nächste geordnete Runde mit dir. Happy Days, deine Verena.